Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Episode 409, Loki, Season 2, Episode 1, Ouroboros.
Welcome to Level 7, a podcast about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's a magical place.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Welcome to Level 7. I'm back, Samantha's back, Stuart's back, and Loki is back.
Yes, every week.
I feel kind of like Loki in this episode. I feel like Loki, you know, it's kind of stretching me out a little bit.
October now.
Life, it's been a rough September, that's all I'm going to say. It's been a rough September. And I'm hoping October doesn't follow September.
It does every year.
It does, but like not in mood. Not in mood. That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, astrologers say that the solar eclipse on Saturday will... I'm checking. I know nothing about astrology, so... I have heard some stuff that it's going to do some funky stuff with the signs, and I'm like, I have no idea what that really means. I'm just going to go with it.
From my personal opinion, it means nothing, and it's all made up.
Loki is back.
Same here.
We are here to talk about it.
Loki's back.
Where to go from here?
This is one of my favorite shows from this phase.
Yeah, I think honestly, this is one of the most consistent shows. I mean, I know we had our issues with season one, but we always, you know. We're not fans if we're not thinking about it and picking it apart, right? But at least This show is consistent. And hey, it got a season two, which is also a step up.
Well, and that's the strange thing. Yeah, no one else got a season two so far.
Except Groot.
Well, you're right. You're right. Groot did. And What If technically gets a season two, even if it was intended to be season one, and they just split it in half. But it counts. It counts. It just hasn't happened yet.
When do those come out? Do we know when those come out? Okay.
All we know is holidays sometime this year. So
possibly maybe. December. Maybe Thanksgiving.
I don't know.
I don't know. Disney Plus is going to have a big Thanksgiving. Three Doctor shows.
Three Doctor?
Oh, man.
They're the
Doctor Who. That's
the
right.
Three
yes.
Specials. They're, I mean, it's not. They haven't confirmed any dates or times yet, but.
Wait, what day is Thanksgiving? And if you're not from the U.S.
It's always on Thursday.
It's always the fourth Thursday, which makes it extra confusing every year for some people here in the United States because it's not consistent.
And Doctor Who Day is the 23rd. So.
Okay, yeah.
A lot of times those coincide, or at least similarly. So it would make sense if there's a big to-do around the 23rd, which is also around Thanksgiving.
And this is the 60th anniversary.
Correct? And the 23rd is a Thursday. So like, the 23rd is Thanksgiving Day. So I could totally see Disney Plus being like, now you just had Thanksgiving, welcome to the Doctor.
David Tennant and Catherine Tate are my favorite Doctor companion pairing, so I'm so excited. Yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty fantastic, and she's really wonderful.
Oh. Okay, I'm about to go on the rabbit trail, but just answer yes or no. Have you seen them online playing the leads in Much Ado About Nothing?
Yes, I think it's amazing.
Not the whole thing, but yes.
It's hilarious. It's on YouTube. Go look for it.
Kenneth Branagh's version of Benedict was always my favorite until I saw David Tennant. And I'm not a big, like, yeah. like he wasn't ever my favorite doctor. I thought the writing was very good, but he was never my favorite doctor. But him as Benedict and Catherine Tate as
Hero?
No, Beatrice.
No, that's her cousin. Beatrice, yeah.
Is just fantastic. It's just fantastic.
Yeah. Anyways.
Anyway, we're going to talk about Loki. Yes.
Also Shakespearean.
Yes.
Also Shakespearean.
I guess.
I mean, like in the grand.
I mean, theme. if you want to stretch it, yeah.
He's an archetype, so. Yeah.
Shakespeare might have written the word Loki down, which is probably more than a lot of. I don't think he wrote Iron Man down.
He may have read something about Viking mythology. That's possible.
Maybe. I think he's more likely to have written the words Iron Man together than written the word Loki, though. I'm just guessing.
Well, I'm not going to
Google literature
this.
Background. But.
Let's move on. But
we should move on. We need to talk about this show here. So, okay. Pulling myself together.
Got it.
Breathing in, breathing out. Let's start over. Not literally, but let's start over. So, Loki season one. You've talked a little bit about your memories of it. What did you think when we got to the end of season one? There's He Who Remains, and Sylvie decides she's going to stab him, and Loki gets thrown away and ends up in a place where there's a giant statue of He Who Remains.
Backtrack that. Loki tries to stop her from killing He Who Remains by not fighting her. That's important in this episode.
Yeah, but my question is,
how do we feel about it?
Where did you think we were going? Yeah, where did you think things were going when we had that reveal? And does this episode go in a place that you were kind of anticipating?
I thought he had gone to an alternate universe TVA, and then they revealed that he was actually in the past TVA, which makes so much more sense, because it makes more sense if there's only one TVA.
I didn't have a thought about it. I was kind of I could, thinking about it, I honestly thought it was a nothing. It was like, this is the end of this is the end of like the TVA saga, right? And the next season of Loki is about, you know, something else dealing with the TVA, or you know how sometimes shows will be like, we're doing the same thing but a little different, you know, like Fringe or something like that. That's kind of what I thought. I didn't necessarily think we were going to see the TVA, Owen Wilson, you know, Rutherford, all of those guys in the same situation again. But I am really glad we did, because I think it adds consistency, and I'm really thankful for the consistency in the Marvel shows.
Yes.
I thought that he had rewritten the TVA so that it wasn't an alternate universe. It was just changed gone forever. That's where I thought we were going, and that he'd have to, like, you know, because we saw the post credit for Ant-Man Quantumania.
Where was he and Owen Wilson looking at He Who Remains being Victorian and magic,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, but he's working with Owen Wilson. And so in my thinking, I'm thinking, okay, so Loki has convinced Mobius that they need to work together. And I'm thinking this is a rewritten, different universe in the sense that it's a adjusted timeline, but still the TVA. And boy, was I wrong.
I don't think you were that far off base. I mean, because I think that's what we thought. And I think I'm probably more aligned with what you're talking about. Looking back, I don't feel like I changed my answer. Did I change my answer? I didn't change my answer. Okay, go ahead.
All right. I don't know if you change your answer. Okay, so that brings us then to now, here and now. And I guess my question to you, should we go through it just beat by beat? You want to go through this character by character? I've got an outline we can read through if you'd like to do that. That might be the way to go.
Personally, I think you got to go from start to finish because I don't think you could do character by character. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, yeah. If you go character by character, it could get, because there is time jumping, it would get confusing.
So previously, Loki was taken in to the TVA because of using time travel to escape the Avengers. And as he learns about the TVA, we learn that nothing is as it seems in the TVA because they're pruning. They don't know why they're pruning. They think they know why they're pruning, which means that they're destroying alternate timelines to keep the sacred timeline sacred. And things seemed super helpless for Loki as they're figuring these things out. They go to the end of time where they find He Who Remains. And as we were talking about, Sylvie decides she wants to kill He Who Remains. He Who Remains talks about how, you know, if you do that, you don't want to do that because, you know, there's alternate me's out there. You don't want to, you really only just want one of me, you know, one of me's good enough or bad enough. So she pushes Loki away and Loki ends up in a place where the TVA has been replaced, or parts of the TVA has been replaced with statues of Kang the Conqueror, aka He Who Remains. Now, for this episode, Loki is on the run. He's running away from people because nobody knows him. His friend Mobius doesn't know him. The Hunter B-15 doesn't know him. He escapes from them only to cause a delivery vehicle to crash and make a dent in the floor because a TV screen falls off the ceiling. And now he's in danger of being caught. But he slips away. Time slips away, that is. And he finds himself in the same place, different time. And Mobius knows who he is. His friends know who he is. But there's still a dent in the ground. And so he thinks, I'm in the future now. I was in the past. And he keeps popping from one to the other, back and forth, and it's really creepy looking.
So, a couple of things.
What are you thinking so far?
The book, the thing that Casey, also known as Rutherford, is listening to, is the same sleep aid that Mark from Oscar Isaac, the Egyptian one, Moon Knight, was listening to.
Moon Knight.
Not sure that means anything, but that's the same thing.
Just means that he has access to the same things that somebody from that universe has access to.
I mean, really what it means is Casey and Mark from Moon Knight share an Audible account. And they probably ought not do that, but that's what it means.
Samantha, are you on board with this so far?
Sure, maybe.
I feel like it grabbed me.
I missed that bit, actually. Yeah, I'll have to get back and watch that.
I feel like it grabbed me because, I mean, we go from him talking to them and trying to convince them, hey, you should know me. And then we come right into this episode and he's running in slow motion and trying to get away and trying to figure things out. The whole dent thing with the television that fell on the ground. The cool, round, circular, globular, I should say, television, spherical television, falls on the ground, makes a dent on the ground, cracks the floor. But the other thing that we're kind of seeing as we go through the episode is that the things he does in the past that affect the past probably didn't happen until he did it.
Yeah.
And that crack wouldn't have been on the floor until he went back to the past, made that change, comes back to the future, and there it is. Because he asks Rutherford, was that buried before? I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure. But
it's almost like he drove over a couple of pines and turned it into Lone Pine Mall instead of Twin Pines Mall.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's not almost like that. It's exactly like that.
I do appreciate how they are using the Back to the Future time travel rules as we know them.
Maybe. The thing is, we're in the TVA, and so the rules
there are
in the TVA are definitely different. Well, there are rules, but they're being broken. And he's breaking them right now by time slipping.
Yes, the mid-century spherical We All Live in the Future and It Is Wonderful designs. I appreciate it so much. One of the things I do appreciate about this show is that it's very distinct in its design.
If I were single and if I had disposable income, because these are not cheap, but you can get them.
Oh, yeah.
I would do my house in that style for sure. I would do the spherical
chairs, you know, from Men in Black.
The egg shape. Yeah. I would do those. I would do that. I maybe not be able to buy a TV like that, but I would find a way to make a fiberglass casing to put a TV in, to hang from the ceiling. I would embrace that. And when people walk into my house, they'd be like, this is the 60s view of the future or the 70s view.
Do you think, though, at this point you would have, like, you'd be sitting with your back to the entrance and they'd walk in and be like, wow, this is a love letter to the 60s. And you'd turn around and you'd be like petting your hairless kitty and say, why, yes, Mr. Bond.
Although it is circa 71.
Right. No, Mr. Bond, I intend you to be circa 74. Yes.
I appreciate your eye for the details. However.
So, Ben.
And for that, you
Ben,
will pay.
If you do that, if you completely redecorate your house like that, would you also grow out your hair a little bit and get giant glasses and have the lamb chop sideburns? The mutton chops.
Yeah. I don't know about that. I can't really grow facial hair very well. So I don't know about that. I mean, this is the alternate universe where this has happened, and I don't have five kids and a loving wife.
I think
but
one
you'd be
thing
all
is,
alone in this house.
I think one thing is absolutely for certain. You would still be single. You would remain single. You would not... That would not elevate your status.
I think that there might be people out there who would appreciate.
Yeah, but they don't live in the rural Midwest like you do.
I don't know if I would have stayed in the rural Midwest if I hadn't gotten married, because that is what kept
That's
me here.
True,
but
I mean, should have.
Anyway,
would've.
That is one of those things, though. I mean, we're talking about this kind of joking, but. You know, the timelines are branching, and it is the kind of thing where, you know, if I hadn't gotten married, would I have stayed here? No, I probably gone. And that's what's happening right now is you have these what ifs that are branching off, and it's the timeline can't handle it. And we're going to find out why it can't handle it, but it's growing exponentially. And so Mobius and Hunter B-15, is that what her name is?
Yes. B-15.
Okay. Well, they're brought to the judge's room. Meanwhile, Loki gets himself into some time slips, but back into the regular time. But when he goes back in time, he's in the judge's room and he sees that Kang's face is right there. And I'm going to be calling him Kang just right now for lack of a better term, because that's just who he is, generally speaking. But you see...
Did they call him Kang in Ant-Man?
Yes.
So he was Kang in Ant-Man? I mean...
Let me look it up just to be sure.
I think Kang is a good name for him.
Well, it's the easiest name to say. I mean, He Who Remains...
That's a lot of
that's
words.
Just a lot of, it's a mouthful. It's a mouthful.
Let's see.
So, while you're looking that up, we find out that... The judge's room with the triangle table and all that stuff clearly used to be designed by him. And that's the other thing I would do if I was single, is I would make a giant mural, a 3D mural of my face five different ways. I just have it, you know, take up one
now
whole
we're
wall.
Suspending. But,
I mean, Ben, you might want to either dig into that a little bit and maybe talk to someone about that a little bit, or completely ignore it for the rest of your days.
Maybe we should all just appreciate the fact that since I'm not single, I'm not doing any
of these
things.
That's also true.
So,
okay, yeah. Snapping in from 60 seconds ago. Jonathan Majors is credited as Kang the Conqueror in Ant-Man 3.
Yeah. So the judges are talking with Mobius and Hunter B-15 about why did you order people to stop pruning? And it's because they've realized that when you are pruning, it's not just protecting the sacred timeline. It's actually killing people. Lots and lots and lots of people. And they decide they're going to do that. We're going to stop. But we're also going to go after Sylvie because she's a problem. So Loki gets there and they go to arrest him. But he's like, no, wait, because I've got information. And he breaks the wall, and you see that the Kang faces have been covered up with new wall. And he says, you know, that's in the past, that's your past. And then we get some exposition. It is well-performed exposition, but it is exposition nonetheless. And he is just spouting all this off to Mobius. Are you ready? Because I typed it out. Here it is. We got to the man at the end of time and he made sense. What a wonderful sentence.
Yeah.
That just, because he shouldn't have made sense. You know, it feels like you call someone the man at the end of time. Like that sounds like someone who's going to be crazy, right? But he makes sense. Maybe his crazy is real. Maybe Loki just wants his cray cray. We thought.
Your kids are annoyed with you for saying that too much, aren't they?
I don't say that outside of the podcast. I'm going to be completely transparent here. I say it way too much on the podcast. But, and the other thing is, because of the release schedule that we found ourselves on, the episode where we talk about all that cray cray stuff hasn't even released yet. But,
Ben,
yeah, okay, so,
I think this might be one of those times where you've got a mildly warm, maybe extremely warm, clutter about your situation. I won't say it's a hot mess, but it's a warm clutter for sure.
So they get to the, Loki says, we got to the man at the end of time and he made sense. We thought it was about freeing the timeline, but that brings only more malevolence. More violence, more war, more of him. They're coming. They're all coming. And then he goes on to say, this is what we know, war, and it's on its way.
Well, what is it good for?
Maybe it's true.
Absolutely nothing.
Maybe it's... Say it again. Maybe it's true. Everything he was pruning, the preservation of the sacred timeline, it was about preventing more of him. There was no simple choice. There was no other way. And basically, Loki has pieced together that the TVA was He Who Remains Kingdom. And the people who are running the TVA don't remember it because he wiped their memories, probably more than one time. And of course, later on, Mobius has the line saying, I have no memory of having my memory wiped.
Yeah.
And also Miss Minutes cannot be trusted because she was working with him. But the idea here is you have this one bad dude who just wanted to be the only one. So he wipes everyone out. All the other hymns are wiped out. But if they go up against him, they could cause things to unravel, which they are causing. And we're going to see what we see in Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, the post-credit, where there are hundreds upon thousands of him. And they're going to wreak havoc.
Are we suggesting that maybe the events of Loki season 2 or Loki 1 and 2 or the series or whatever are way, 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 way in the future?
Well, when they were at the end of time, it was, I don't know. This is where it gets a little confusing still, trying to figure out, like, how does this timeline work? Mm-hmm. How does the TVA work? The TVA is kind of outside of time, which is something that I appreciate. I use that in my book Time Flies, where they had the time between times, where they were able to go and be in a place that where time didn't move, but they used, that's how they went to other times. So they go to the time between times, and that was like the time stream that allowed them to travel from one place to another in time. I don't know what I'm saying. There's a part of me that's thinking that this is all cyclical, and like this is not the first time the universe has gone through all of this, and that, you know, whenever the universe resets, that's when they do that kind of memory wipe, or I don't know why He Who Remains does the memory wipe when he does it, that we haven't gotten those specifics yet, but, you know, things aren't being remembered from 400 years ago, you know,
mm-hmm.
which we're going to find out momentarily about things that Mobius doesn't remember, not just that he doesn't remember having his memory wiped, but. Yeah.
I have two thoughts about this scene that you have not covered yet. One, when Loki blinks or whatever, hops back into the past and he's alone in that conference room, he plays the reel-to-reel tape and it is Kang talking to Renslayer. So he discovers mm-hmm. that Kang and Renslayer know each other, at least in the past.
But Renslayer may not remember that.
Maybe. We'll see.
Because everyone's memories were wiped or something. I mean, it's interesting, and it brings up all these interesting possibilities of the timeline and the TVA timeline. Maybe you can time slip, but he doesn't want anyone to know that because he doesn't want anyone checking in on him back in the past.
Maybe. Another thing I've noticed from this scene is there's an odd exchange between Hunter X5 and General Dox, where they kind of touch foreheads, and B-15 checks it, but she doesn't say anything.
It's weird. And the fact that they cut to B-15 going, huh, is an okay thing for us to go, that's weird, and it's a clue for us to notice it. Was that lady in Game of Thrones?
Yes,
she was weird in Game of Thrones too.
And I'm not saying the actress, I think she was weirder in Game of Thrones. She was
That character was weird in Game of Thrones for sure. But she's a fantastic actress, and then the other actress in there is also pretty amazing. She is wheelchair bound, and so she's got a very distinctive look, and it works well for the show. But the fact that she is, you know, pursuing that passion, I think, is amazing. So,
yes, and she recently appeared in Good Omens season 2.
Oh, cool!
Yeah,
I just want to be the guy who's asleep, like in that conference room. I just want to be that guy.
Weird, like, and funny.
That guy. You know he did something sometime to get to that position, right? And now he's just like, you know what? I got tenure. I'm just going to sleep. I don't care. That's the guy I want to be.
Maybe he does care, and he's just really tired, though. I mean, they've had a really rough time
here. Maybe.
They're figuring all this out. He's been up late at night, and he's not young anymore.
That's true. Well, sure. Maybe time has no, you know, is different for him. Maybe he's the man out of time who's out of time.
Maybe. So Loki keeps time slipping, and Mobius just can't have any of this. It's awful. It's awful. And it's impossible. So there's a couple different problems. One is it looks terrible. It looks horrifying. And it really bothers Mobius. It doesn't feel too bad for Loki, but it's not comfortable. And that moment in the elevator where it happens and they're arguing about like how bad it looks. And then Mobius says, "What do you think?" And then the camera just pans over and there's just someone standing there in the elevator with them who has no idea what's going on.
That's that right there is classic Owen Wilson, right? That's the classic Owen Wilson type of situation to be in. And they're talking about horrible things but they're being pretty, you know, low key about it. Not low key, but pretty subdued about the whole thing. And then it's classic Owen Wilson.
So the other thing that it does, though, is it just brings it's a stylistic flourish, right? There's a lot of centered filmography in this. And so anytime, it's a lot. I saw someone say that they didn't want to watch Loki to see a Wes Anderson film. But as soon as they said that, I was like, well, that is what this feels like mm-hmm. right now. There's a lot of just the characters are framed in the center. Not only that, when you have a conversation between Loki and Obi, which we'll talk about in a moment here, the camera is just straight on. They are in the middle looking at the camera, and then the camera does a 180, and doesn't spin 180, cuts a 180, and it's just looking right at the other character that's looking at the camera, and you're switching POV there. But it's right on the line, you know, it's not doing it as a three quarter mm-hmm. shot where you're, it's like one camera tilted looking at one and then moves to the other one. It's just a straight on looking through the fourth wall kind of a thing that happens a lot in this episode where characters are looking directly at the camera as they are observing something else or, you know, they're not breaking the fourth wall, but they are engaged with the fourth wall.
Here's the difference between this and a Wes Anderson film. This is better. I'm not a fan of Wes Anderson. Ooh. A hot take.
Wow.
Shots fired. It's fine. It is fine. I've written lots of papers on why I don't like Wes Anderson.
Oh, that's why.
but the difference.
Have you seen Asteroid City?
I've not seen Asteroid City.
It was the same color palette as this episode of Loki.
So, okay. And I say that, and it's not to say that Wes Anderson is whatever. You like him, fine. This, to me, is more engaging than pretty much any other Wes Anderson movie I've ever seen, because stuff actually happens. Wes Anderson has a different style of filmmaking than this is. So to compare it to, I don't want to watch a Wes Anderson film, that's why I'm watching Loki, it's kind of like, whatever. I do appreciate the stylistic changes, though, or stylistic decisions about framing the characters like you were just talking about and using a straight on camera to frame them in such a way that it's interesting and poignant. And then to use that, especially when they're talking to Obi, because I think that's the most pivotal part of this whole show, whole episode.
Well, and with we'll talk about the Obi scene. Well, I guess we can just talk about it right now. Because when you have that camera just focus straight in on him, what's interesting about that is you're changing POV mm-hmm. every time. And so whenever the camera cuts, you're either in Obi's POV in the future, Obi's POV in the past, Loki's POV, or Mobius's mm-hmm. POV. And which most people probably know what I mean, but POV is point of view. And so it's like, you know, the camera takes the place of this other character. And that is what makes that scene work so well, because it's cutting between these two conversations that are happening in the future and in the past. And it allows the conversation to flow and cut between the characters And it works really well. It's super effective. The other thing I would compare this to, and this is probably where my mind would have gone to before thinking about Wes Anderson, is Stanley Kubrick as well. Because Stanley Kubrick is another one who, I mean, he had some motion to the camera when he was doing other things, but with 2001 especially, which is my primary frame of reference for Stanley Kubrick, there's a lot of things that just get centered in the screen. Characters' faces that get centered in the screen. A red dot that gets centered in the screen. And he frames things, and he does this in The Shining as well, though, but he frames things so, like, the camera is directly center in the hallway or directly center in the room. And it's what's the word I'm looking for, where the two sides are the same?
It's, you know, mirrored?
You fold a piece of paper.
Oh,
symmetrical.
Symmetrical. Symmetrical. That's the word, man. Thank you. But he films things symmetrically. And that's where, with Loki here, there's a little added element to it where things are symmetrical until they aren't. And so in that elevator conversation, looping back finally to where I was, but in that elevator conversation, the characters are positioned symmetrically. And the framing of the background is pretty much symmetrical. But then Owen Wilson steps out of it, puts his hand out, says, "What about you?" And the camera just turns over. And it turns over to this person who's standing in the corner, and everything's askew now. It's not quite a Dutch angle, but it moves things askew. And so you have their emotional point of view, which is they are on equal standing, going back and forth, trying to figure out what's going on, but they're together. And then you go over to this other person, and she's kind of in this other corner, and it's a little bit skewed, and you can tell she does not want to be there. She does not understand what's going on, and she is very uncomfortable. And so it is camera movement, camera placement, that is also informative of the emotions of the moment. And that's one thing that this has, Stuart, that I would agree with you, that a Wes Anderson film does not necessarily have, and that is that the emotions are allowed to be front and center.
Yes.
Wes Anderson, I feel like, he's not quite as cold and clinical as Kubrick can be, but he doesn't let his actors be actorly.
No. No, he doesn't.
So I did like Asteroid City. It was quirky and weird, and it had a bunch of different actors in it who you would like, you know, but it
next
was,
week on the Wes Anderson
never watching
show.
Again. I'm never watching that. Again,
so. If I ever have to watch the Royal Tenenbaums again, I will not be a happy person.
I enjoy experiencing a Wes Anderson film for the first time, but I have no desire to ever revisit anything by him that I've ever seen. So.
The one thing, okay, so going back to what you were talking about with the way things are framed, and I think of the couple of filmmakers we've talked about, Kubrick, Anderson, and Loki. The one thing, I'm not trying to exclude all other films, but the one thing that those three filmmakers do really well is they also have, their sets are very intricate and very well designed. So if you're looking at this scene with Obi in this fix-it shop, there's so many little things that you can pick out and you can look at and you can dissect and you can pause the frame and you can do this or all this sort of stuff. And if you take 2001, you look at the same thing. The camera sits there long enough to where your eye starts to look at the space surrounding Dave while he's staring into the camera. And again, you can only do that with a very wide lens, you know, so when we're talking about wide lenses, the scope, frame size, that has the opportunity. And this, again, lends itself very nicely to that. I never thought I would have.
Well, and the other thing that happens.
I never thought I would have compared Wes Anderson to Loki to Stanley Kubrick, but here we are.
But here we are. Yeah. Well, that's one of the nice things is So the scene after the OB scene, which we still need to talk about the OB scene, but where they're walking down the hall and the whatever lens they're using, when they get to the point where they are leaving that hallway, which is darker, it's painted, you know, a submarine gray or whatever, and the camera's moving, and then the camera stops and pivots to look at what they're looking at, which is the door to go into the temporal loom control area. Well, as the camera is pivoting because of the lens they're using, you're getting a little bit of a fisheye effect. And it gives it, again, it kind of gives it this off-kilter, again, not quite a Dutch angle kind of a thing, but it does put your own perspective off-kilter a little bit as it moves. And you're getting ready to look at what they're looking at, which is something that is a problem. It's something that should make you feel off-kilter because it's something that's going wrong. And it's and I wrote down the message on the ground in front of it. It says temporal radiation levels escalate exponentially beyond this point. Likelihood of spaghettification increases 7,000%.
Hello, everything, everywhere, all at once.
Yeah.
No bagels.
So I really, we should look and see who this director is, who directed this episode, because this, two directors, Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead.
Well, those kinds of decisions would be less about the directors and more about the production team.
Well, yes and no. You can tell that who's ever producing this has a very specific desire, sense that they're going for, and they would have called that down. The director and the director of photography at that point get to tell the story in such a way that utilizes the all of the production staff's best work, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's sort of what we're talking about. When you compare TV to film, obviously you can't do a one-to-one director to director because it's two different animals. But this isn't necessarily TV, right? Because it's, you know, the budget of one of these is like all five of Kevin Smith's movies put together. You know what I mean? It doesn't necessarily equate. So that's interesting.
I think what we also really need to do is, if we can, go back to season one and only look at the scenes that are in the TVA, because I feel like this is something it's a style that's very specific to being in the TVA.
That would be interesting to do too.
Well,
yeah.
For this episode, the post credit does the same thing though. The post credit, when she's in the McDonald's, does the thing where it centers her. She's looking at the camera.
I think that's a McDonald's inside the TVA.
It specifically says, there's a title on the screen where it specifically says that it is Branch Timeline in Broxton, Oklahoma in 1982.
Okay, that's the Wes Anderson timeline.
Okay.
Honestly, that, again, though, does feel like a Wes Anderson movie when you move in there and just kind of that dreamlike quality and everyone's wearing the classic old school McDonald's costumes. Yeah. I guess not costumes, but uniforms. So, okay, we need to talk about OB.
Yes. Yes.
Ouroboros. Let's first define an Ouroboros and what it represents.
So, Ouroboros, that's the snake eating its own tail. That is a cycle of time. It's the end is the beginning is the end is the beginning is the end.
Life, death, and rebirth. So I think those are the themes that we're going to be looking at in this season.
And that's what makes me wonder, just the title of the episode already got me thinking about, are we looking at cycles here? Specifically, cycles of time. You know, the universe begins, the universe ends, and it does it all over again. And Loki's talking about, he might have erased your memories more than once. Like, what if he's just keeping the TVA going as the universe goes, and you have the universe born, the TVA's there. The universe ends, the TVA's there. And at couple points in between there, he wipes their memories because he doesn't want them remembering what has happened before or something like that. But then Obi shows up and that's his name, Ouroboros.
Yes, which is a shape, but also Mobius is a shape too. It's not just a name.
And Mobius is a continuous right. line. The Mobius strip is a never-ending strip because you've taken, you know, a piece of paper, twisted one side, taped it together, and now you can go around forever and never lift your finger, but it will touch both yes. sides. And yeah, the names definitely go together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the names are very symbolic of what these characters represent. I think Ouroboros, I'm thinking he may be a second hand to Kang. I think he has a very close relationship with Kang, and not because his job looks like he was tucked away and hidden from everyone else. But yet he knows everything about the TVA, and he even wrote the handbook.
But they have access to him.
They have access to him, but they forget that, and they know he's there, but they don't go and talk to him much. He just sits down there and what's it called? What's the name of?
They use pneumatic tubes to send yeah. stuff to him, and then he yeah. just sends it right back.
Repairs
after fixing
and advancement.
It.
That's his department. So I think we need yeah. to pay attention to that department name and really try to connect the whole Ouroboros life and death and rebirth with what repairs and advancements to figure out what is his real job here. I think his job is, he may even be there to make sure that if things get wonky in the TVA and the people who work there become self-aware, that he makes sure that things stay on track.
Are you suggesting that he's like involved in mind wiping people
and
stuff?
He might be.
Because he's definitely acting like he's been mind wiped.
Here's the thing.
But I also feel like he's been pushed in and aside and discarded, like that guy from the movie Office Space who's been sent down to the basement in the closet, in the
stapler.
Storage closet.
This is my red stapler.
Yes, and he has the red stapler. And I cannot remember the character's name.
Here's the thing, though. As possibly the world's largest franchise, most profitable franchise, they're not going to take Short Round or Data.
Don't call them Short Round.
I'm doing it on purpose. Okay. They're not going to take this actor and turn him into a villain.
Okay.
Sorry.
Or that's exactly what they're going to do because you don't expect it. And he doesn't even have to have that past pedigree.
Yeah, but does he need to be a villain to fulfill his role?
I think he does if he's working with Kang and he knows.
Or maybe he used to
Kang.
Work with Kang, but now he's isolated down in the basement.
I could see him inadvertently working with Kang. So like Kang has distorted whatever his original mission was to work for Kang, and this is going to cause him bother. I can see that happening. But I don't think they're going to make this guy who just won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor put on a black hat. He might put on a gray hat, but I don't think he's going to put on a black hat.
Well, for the time being, for the nonce, if you would, I am taking him at face value. That he is exactly what he says he is. And he repairs things for people, and he really likes helping people, and he really is just doing his job. And he knows everything because he has to know everything because that's his job.
Well, I'm also thinking about archetypes too, and he may also fit into the helpful little friend archetype, which is your R2-D2s, your Datas from Goonies, what else? It's in just about every movie.
Short Round from Indiana Jones.
Short Round.
Let's before we move on, I just want to say something. Listen to the cadence, listen to the rhythm, and listen to the the sounds of the words I'm about to say. The temporal loom. The temporal loom. The temporal loom. The temple of doom. The temporal loom. The temple of doom. Not me. This is my boss. He brought it up. But it's Obi who keeps saying it over and over and over again.
He referred a lot of his previous works. And Kihua Kwan, he referred to a lot of his previous works in this one episode. And I was tickled throughout the whole episode.
So what you're saying, Ben, is that Dr. Jones is actually part of this, he actually worked with Captain Carter way back in the day. Is that what you're saying?
We won't be what sure until Captain America Brave New World.
Where he will.
What I am saying is they definitely were breaking the fourth wall a little bit for us and referencing their, and I think that maybe they made it up and then realized it. But maybe not. Maybe they made it up because they wanted it to be this. But once they realized it, they're like, we're going to make him say this like 5 times.
They wrote it down and then they went, let's lean into this a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the temporal loom is where raw time is turned into physical timeline. And it is now being overloaded because there are too many branches to weave together on the loom, which is very mythological and technical. And this is, the MCU has done this a few times now where it's taken the mythological and just went with it and said, you know what? That star right there created by some gods. Okay. And we're just going to roll with it. And this is the same thing here, where you have this loom of time, which is also a very mythological kind of idea, where you have time being spun by the fates or whatever. And yeah, and now it's overloading because there's too many branches and it can't handle it. The problem is, and this is the problem for this episode, the time slipping keeps happening. And so Loki keeps bouncing between the past of the TVA and the future of the TVA, which should not be able to happen, but it is. And as he goes in the past, Obi starts remembering things that happened in the past as they happen. And future Obi, like, he needs to have the temporal extractor. I can't remember what it was exactly called.
I wrote it down. Temporal aura extractor, because I had a feeling you would forget the name of it.
Yeah.
Temporal aura extractor.
But see, what you don't know is you didn't know you needed that until I went back in the past, and I was actually talking about this with you in the past, and I said I'm going to need to know that, and that's why you wrote it down in the future. But that's what's happening, is I think he's changing things. He goes back in the past, he's talking about, what do I need to do this, and past Obi says, you need a temporal aura extractor. Do you have one? No. Can you make one and give it to us in the future? Sure. In the future, Mobius is saying, do you have one? And Obi says, no. Yes? Hey, there's one right here.
Ben, have you...
And the same thing happens...
I was going to ask, have you seen a better version of this before?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I was trying, because I saw this the first time we watched it, I saw this happening. I'm like, this is really well constructed and well put together. Like, I've never seen something this well done and this succinct and made its point so well before. And I was trying to think of of some random sci-fi TV show. I mean, honestly, the best I can think of is the Back to the Future stuff. Maybe there was an episode of like Stargate, yeah, or something like that that did something similar, but never as succinct. You know, stuff changes in the background, and the viewer is supposed to catch up to it and maybe see what's happening, but never anything so direct and so succinct.
where they just use it. And yeah, and the thing is, though, usually they're not going to do that kind of thing because it does kind of break down logically. I think the only reason they're able to do it here with this show is, first of all, they're in the TVA, and so rules are getting broken anyway. But you're getting into the grandfather paradox, right? Loki didn't need the temporal aura extractor until he went back in the past and started time slipping. And so he goes back in the past and is able to ask him to make this thing for the future, and he changes time. Like he has changed time now so that Obi has now done this. And it's when you break it down logically, a lot of times writers are going to want to stay away from that because they want the logical time travel. They want the rules time travel. You know, this is, I had to work really hard in my novel, Ghost of the Future. I had to work super hard to make sure that as some of the time travel stuff in the middle is happening, that it all makes sense and works. And because I wanted it to make sense and work. This doesn't make sense. This doesn't.
Yet. It does not make sense yet. Because this is only episode 1.
But it works.
It works, and they will establish rules for us, I think, as we're going forward, as to why it works. But we accept it because it's happening. Yeah. And there are times when people do something like this and it doesn't feel intentional, but it feels like a mistake is usually how I feel when something like that happens. Unless it's Saturday morning time travel, which is able to play a little bit looser and with the rules. And
I just remembered that Back to the Future at one point did have a Saturday morning cartoon.
It's true. So did Bill and Ted. Wait. Bill and Ted did this.
Oh, did they?
Bill and Ted did this kind of where they're in jail. I'm trying to remember exactly how this worked. And I have seen this kind of thing before where they're in jail and they're like, well, here's what's going to happen. We're just going to look under the chair there. And there's the key. Why is the key there? Because when we get out of jail, we're going to go back in the past and put the key there for us. You know, and they did that kind of thing. I think it was they did that kind of thing. It definitely in the third movie is when they did, which that's the one that made me cry. It was beautiful.
I feel like I saw it in the Doctor Who 50th anniversary special. They said they're in the jail cell and all three doctors are there and they're like, if we put our sonic screwdrivers together, it will. And then the door opens because it's wood. But I've never seen it done.
Yeah, Doctor Who is perfect because it is a perfect example of how they've played with those time travel rules. Because they do it just about every episode. And especially some of the older Doctor and Master conflicts. And I think they really hit the nail head in the Doctor Who, was it the Red Nose Day special? Yeah.
Yes. Yep. With Jonathan Price
and, oh gosh, what's his face that played Mr.
Rowan Atkinson.
Rowan Atkinson. Yeah. He plays the Doctor. Jonathan Price plays the Master. And yeah, they are going back and forth because they are anticipating each other by going back in the past, setting up a trap. And then the trap gets foiled because they went back in the past and you know, anticipated what the trap was going to be. And it's hilarious. It is very, very
funny.
And
then funny. The Doctor changes 5 times in like a few minutes.
Well, isn't that the first time the Doctor was a woman?
Not canonically, but yes.
But that they did it there.
Yeah, that thing is not considered canon. Although
it's very beloved by fans.
It kind of is now because of the way they set up Jodie's, you know, infinite children or whatever it is.
Well, I haven't seen that far, so
keep watching.
I just don't know. I'm still watching Tom Baker right now, by the way.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I'm sticking with him. Sticking with him.
So,
okay, so
this show.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask. Let's get back into the temporal loom.
So, here's what they have to do to stop Loki from going, you know, time slipping. He has to prune himself from the timeline. And if he prunes himself from the timeline, that'll bounce him out of all timelines. But they have the extractor that will pull him out of the timeline, and he will be back to normal. It'll be okay. If they fail, he will be spaghettified.
You know what? I just realized what they did.
Not only that.
They basically turned him off and then turned him back on again. Or deleted the app and then reinstalled the app.
Yeah. The other thing they have to do this is Mobius has to go out and has to set the extractor to be able to pull him back in. But if they fail, Mobius will have his skin peeled off his body.
Ew.
And there's a little back and forth about what would be worse, being spaghettified and dying, or... And then Loki says, but at least you would get to live. But what kind of life is that with no skin? What's the quality of life with no skin? But
I'm sure it's very short.
So the stakes are high.
Yeah.
Well, we find out that what's actually going to happen is while he's out there, his spacesuit that he's in will age. And when that finally goes away, his body will age. His skin will be peeled off.
Yes.
And he will die.
I love that spacesuit, by the way. Love it.
That is so... awesome. If I was single, I would buy that for my winter coat.
Honestly, it looks like something out of... Oh, here's another... Well, it's not exactly a time travel movie, but it looks like something out of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
It does. It also looks like something just from classic old school sci-fi where they were looking at diving suits as the model for what a spacesuit would have to look like.
I got 12 Monkey Brazil vibes out of it.
The Terry Gilliam vibes. We got that from first season a lot.
I mean,
and Terry Gilliam is one of my favorite directors of all time, and he directed some of my favorite movies of all time. So, and he is like Wes Anderson with emotion and imagination.
Yeah.
So, not really. But anyway, we have the stakes, and the stakes get higher because they have to do something about the temporal loom. What are they going to do? Well, I have to close the blast doors to protect the TVA, and then we can see about resetting and figuring out the overloading loom. But if I close the blast doors and you haven't finished this, you're never going to be able to do it. Loki and you are going to die. You can't return. So they go ahead and try anyway.
Every time someone says blast doors, every single time I hear A New Hope in my head.
I was going to say Star Wars.
Open the blast doors. Close the blast doors. Every single time. Just hashtag there you go.
So we have a counting time, a ticking time clock, counting down, and he even gives it a little bit of extra time. I really like it. He's telling Mobius, it's too late. He's gone. We've lost him. No, give him a little more time. Okay, 5, 4, 3, 3, 3. But Obi has a job to do. He hits the red button that's going to close the blast doors. Fortunately, as slow as his countdown was, the blast doors are slower. But what's happening to Loki is he is in that other timeline, or the other time period, rather. He needs to get a time stick so he can prune himself when the light turns green. Mobius is ready. Loki isn't. Obi is. And Loki gets a phone call in the midst of all this need to hurry, which he doesn't answer. So there's that. But instead, he gets to an elevator door near the phone, and the elevator door opens, and it's Sylvie who's there. And then he gets hit with a time stick, and he comes blasting out of the time loom, slams into Mobius, who's running to get back to the blast doors, but he doesn't make it in time. He's not going to make it in time, rather, but because Loki slams into him, they both fly through the door, and they made it.
So who do you think
they're safe?
Got him with the time stick?
Well, that is a great question. It confused me the first time I watched it. The second time, I'm like, okay, someone has done this. Mm-hmm. But I don't know who it is. It's someone behind him?
Maybe it's a future version of himself.
I was going to say, I think it's another Loki who did it.
Or it could be Sylvie, another Sylvie who did it. Because we do have lots of time travel shenanigans happening here. When he gets back, the first thing he does is he says, we need to find Sylvie. And so I feel like there was more going on that we didn't see, and that we're going to see that scene again, maybe from Sylvie's perspective, as she's trying to open the door. I would also say it's possible that that happens after 1982's events in the post-credit. I don't know, but we got some timeline issues to unravel here with this episode. So could be another Loki, could be another Sylvie, could be another Mobius even.
Well, OB said that Loki had to, what's the word again? Loki had to prune himself. So I'm thinking it's a future version of himself, or it's another timeline version of himself, or heck, it could be Thor. I don't know, but I think it may be Loki, because for some reason that Loki pruning himself was important to make sure the cycle was complete.
We are going to see the scene again, though.
I think so too. Yeah.
I think you might be right. I think you might be onto something, Samantha. Yeah. That is Loki. I like that. It's not where my mind went, but I like that. Yeah.
Did your mind go to Sylvia? Sylvie?
It went to Sylvie, and it went to X5.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it could...
It being like one of the guards there.
Yeah. Who was... Yeah.
They were already looking for him. They were already trying to capture him in that time period.
And he did steal the time stick from him in the beginning.
In the meantime, Judge Dox is taking lots of TVA troops to find Sylvie, although X5 thinks there's something else going on here. This is too much. All this for just her.
Which is another version of himself, which means he's in love with himself, which is on character, you know?
And then we got our post-credit, which, like I said, the title says, it's a branched timeline in Broxton, Oklahoma in 1982. Sylvia arrives just in time to try out the new McNuggets. They're new this year, I guess. I should have looked to see if it actually... Well, I have time to do that right now. But because I remember when they were introduced.
I don't.
McDonald's.
I don't even think I was conceived at that point.
McDonald's did do a very, very recently, past couple of months, did do a promotion that was like, go back in time or whatever. And so you clicked on you scanned the QR code and you scrolled down, and then it was a trailer for Loki season 2. And I sent it to you guys. Do you guys remember that?
Yes.
Did you remember it before I just described it?
No. So it was introduced in select markets in 1981, which would make sense that they'd be new in 1982. McDonald's was doing a promotional thing where it was like celebrating McDonald's appearing on the screen in different movies and TV shows. And it was a anticipatory thing for Loki that they were going to be featuring.
Okay, Loki. That would make sense.
It made it seem like it was bigger than it actually was, because it wasn't. I mean, it was like, order McNuggets. Okay. Did. Good. Plan to. So.
Yeah. But if you order the McNuggets, you got to also order a side salad and then put the McNuggets on the side salad, and all of a sudden you have this fancier salad. And you save money.
Or you just eat them.
Yeah. Take your rabbit food out, please.
So here's the thing. She walks into this McDonald's and I am instantly transported back in time. I am transported mm-hmm. back in time. I remember McDonald's when it looked like that. I remember the tree on the wall like that. I remember the tables looking like that. The chairs looking like that. The uniforms, the hats. And I could smell it. I could feel it. It just made me think we're on a trip to Grandma's house right now.
As the kids say, did you have a core memory unlocked?
I guess, maybe.
I said kid said. I don't know.
Yeah, the sunroom bit, my local McDonald's when I was growing up did not have that. But I do remember the Wendy's, which was just around the corner, had that sort of sunroom space.
And they would leak. Those windows... I remember just multiple Wendy's having trouble when it would rain and that they'd have buckets out. Well,
ours, actually, they only remodeled that Wendy's maybe about 5 years ago. So I don't think the one in my hometown had that problem. Because it was there for years and years and years. Maybe we were just lucky, but. But there you go.
Yeah. So, like I said, I think we have some things to figure out. But one of the things I did want to notice is her reaction. She walks in. He says, "What do you want?" And she says, "I don't want possum, rats, or whatever. Whatever it is, I want it dead." He's like, "Well, you could have our new McNuggets." And she says, "I want it all. I want to try it all." And she's looking around, and it's an idealized world. You have families happily sitting together and eating. You have a couple sitting together and rubbing each other's hands. She just has this look on her face of almost grief. And it's because this is not the world she grew up in. She never experienced this world where things were happy and you could eat meat, that you didn't have to kill yourself. And she wants to try it all. Now, how is she going to pay for it? That's a whole other story.
Oh, she'll have to dine and dash. I doubt she carries money on her.
But this is where I feel like this is the first thing that happens to her, or one of the first things that happens to her after the last episode of the first season. And when we see her in that elevator door, it may not be an elevator, but whatever that sliding door is like there, when we see that... Next, it's in this. So Sylvie, now it's in her future that we're going to see that. And I think you're right, Samantha. It's Loki who kills Loki, sends him back. And then Loki and Sylvie are going to, this might even be where they find each other. And they'll answer the phone. There's just too many things going on in that scene for us to never go back to it.
And it's too specific. Yes, McDonald's and Disney go back and whatever, but it's too specific to be like, let's invest a lot of time and energy to recreate a McDonald's in 1982. So something else needs to be happening in 1982. And I don't have my handy dandy MCU timeline to figure out what that could be. So it'd be interesting to see if it reverberates into the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Aren't we going to get the MCU timeline book before this show, the season concludes?
I think so, yes.
Then we may be able to answer that question in a couple weeks.
So Broxton, however, there's something interesting here. Broxton, Oklahoma is from Thor comic books. And it may be a real place. I don't know. But I did look it up. And Thor Volume 3, which was written by J. Michael Straczynski and kind of rebooted Thor a little bit, where Asgard falls to Oklahoma. And it's actually a kind of interesting story arc. I didn't finish it, but I did start it, where it's just outside of this town, Broxton, and they're like, we can't put that here. You don't have the right permits to put like buildings here. So Thor magically lifts it off the ground. It's 3 feet off the ground, so it's not technically on the, you know, the ground of this township or whatever. But I basically all the stuff where they're referencing this idea where Asgard comes to Earth, but it's in Norway. This is what's kind of happening in Thor volume 3, number 1 from 2007.
Okay. According to Wikipedia, Broxton, Oklahoma does exist. It's an unincorporated community in Oklahoma.
Okay.
So it's very small.
And it's small in the comics, and it gets bigger by quite a bit because all the Asgardians are there. But yeah. So overall, what'd you think of episode 1 of Loki, season 2?
This is the best thing from the MCU in quite a while.
Some recently strong words.
Yeah, recently we have the MCU has just not been up to par the way it was in phase 3. And it's been making me sad. And I'm really excited to see the Marvels, but at the same time right now, I've recently realized I should start dreading it because the MCU has just not been as good as it has been. It's not as intriguing in some ways.
I mean, Secret Invasion.
It's just missing something.
True for Secret Invasion, for sure.
Secret Invasion was disappointing.
I thought this was a very good second season. I'm glad to see it come back and be consistent. That's my big thing. It's consistent with what we saw in season 1. So that's what I say. Yay, Loki.
My fear is that it is going to be something similar to what I felt at the beginning of Ahsoka, what I felt at the end of Secret Invasion. I hope that it's able to maintain what it's doing right now in this episode, but at the same time, I have these fears because I feel like we didn't go anyplace in this episode. We got some fun scenes. We got some crazy cool scenery. We got strong cinematography, but it didn't go anywhere. And it didn't, as much as he exposited the stakes of He Who Remains, now there's going to be lots of him, I would like to see, and this is for all of Disney Plus and for a lot of streaming things, but it would have been nice for them to set up, like, this is the first episode of season 2. Tell us what's happening. Give us something. Give us some stakes. Let us see the bad guy. You know, you don't have to be artistic for artistic's sake and subvert expectations. This is the thing that's kind of bothered me recently, is that people are trying so hard to subvert expectations. Picard season 1 and 2. It was all about subverting your expectations and doing the thing. We're not going to do the thing you want because that's what you expect. And we won't want to give you what you expect, even though that's what we want. And with this, I just would like to see what's really at stake here. Give us a little bit more information. Let us see Jonathan Myers. You know, let us have a scene with him so we can at least know where you're going. So is it strong? Yes. Did I like it? Yes. But at the same time, I was frustrated and a little I'm a little nervous about, is this going to take us a similar road that, that the Secret Invasion took us on?
Well, that's where my consistent comment comes in. I think the first episode of Loki, season one, episode one, was similar in tone. There was some weird stuff that had to happen. We had to set the stage for what's going on, introduce some new characters, and move forward. I think recently we've gotten a lot of TV shows, specifically on Disney Plus, specifically in the streaming world, that are not as well put together. And that's just a problem.
Another problem is there's a feeling that I get of indulgence, where I feel like the people who are making these things, there's one of two things happening. One is they have to take this stuff and stretch it out because they're being told 6 episodes, can't be a movie, 6 episodes. Or it's them saying, we can do whatever we want. This is for streaming. We don't have to follow pacing that people are used to or follow emotional beats that people are hoping for. We can do whatever we want because it doesn't matter. People are going to watch it. And for this Marvel stuff, they're right about us because we podcast about it, but they haven't been right about a lot of other people who are saying, I'm done.
You also don't need a whole bunch of homework. You also don't need to have watched. I mean, yeah, you need to have watched Loki season one, obviously. But the idea of having to have watched Quantumania, I don't think you would have needed to do that. Plus an entire...
No.
You honestly have just needed to watch Loki season one. That's it.
And maybe Infinity War or Endgame. But they gave you that in the previously on. So they let you know what's going on in season one. All right, last words, final words. And then for post-credit, we'll talk about an old TV show and a new podcast, if you guys don't mind me being self-indulgent.
I'm glad Loki's back. And I'm glad that we get to podcast together. And I'm glad that y'all get to listen and join us for it. So thank you for doing that.
And I would like to thank our Patreon patrons, Dave, Julie, Blessed Cheesemaker, Jeffrey, and Andrew. Thank you also very much.
So I had the line that I wanted to use, you guys. The line that I wanted to use, because we always do a line from the shows. And the line I wanted to use was, I'm having trouble reconciling that, because it was a great little line, you know, and it's recognizable. He says it twice. It fits. The problem is I can't figure out what to do for lead in to that. And because of that, you know, I need a line. I have a line. I can't use this line. And now I'm having trouble reconciling that. How's that?
I liked it.
And the other one was, get ready to see some hoofing like you've never seen before. Thanks for listening to Welcome to Level 7. You've heard from us, now we'd love to hear from you. You can leave us a voicemail by calling 1-775-5-LEVEL-7. That's 1-775-553-8357. Or send us an email to feedback@welcometolevel7.com. Just don't forget, the 7 is spelled out. You can also go to welcometolevel7.com/feedback and leave us a message there. Or join us on our Facebook group, facebook.com/welcometolevel7. The 7 is spelled out. And don't forget, if you'd like to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/welcometolevel7. The 7 is spelled out. And become a Patreon supporter there. Once again, thanks so much for listening, and Godspeed. That music is intense.
So, Ben, do you want to hear about this new podcast I started listening to?
Yeah, yeah. What is it?
It's called Up From the Ashes.
Really? Tell me more.
It's about this Canadian sci-fi show that nobody's ever seen, and very few people actually know about. But I knew about it. It's called The Star Lost. I've never seen it, but I knew about it. And this host, he's really awesome. He goes really in depth to the episodes about The Star Lost, again, that nobody's ever seen. But it's a really engaging show. Do you know anything about it?
I do know a little bit about it. I've heard this show before. I'm also listening to that podcast because I'm editing it and recording it. Yeah. So, and we did talk about it a little bit in the last episode, but yeah, it is talking about, you know, Doctor Who being 60 years ago this year. Well, the Star Lost is 50 years ago this year, and what the experiment is, it's only a 16 episode series. So the experiment is getting an episode out 50 years to the day after the original broadcast. And yeah, and it is one of the worst sci-fi shows of all time, according to some people. I'm not necessarily one of them because I do find enjoyment and nostalgia, and there's legitimate reasons to like this show. But yeah. Yeah, so upfromtheashespodcast.com is where the website is, and our Facebook page is facebook.com/upfromtheashespodcast. And I also do a 50 years to the day review of Star Trek the Animated Series on Up From the Ashes bonus episodes at buymeacoffee.com/upfromtheashes. And the idea behind Up From the Ashes is we are lifting this up from the ashes and talking about it. And I kind of feel like you're, you know, almost like looking at, reaching into the ashes after the fire is done and, you know, excavating things and being an archaeologist and taking a look at things. But then we look at the episodes and what they were like, how they went, trivia about the cast and crew. And then we also talk about the big sci-fi ideas that they were trying to reach for in the show. The show itself is about a generation ship that is off course, and people have forgotten that they came from Earth and they live in domes, and each dome is a different type of world. And it's three young people from an Amish culture, Amish-ish kind of a culture, find out that they're on a spaceship and it's going to go into a sun and they're all going to die unless they can save the ship. And now they're traveling the ship to figure out what to do. And it's created by Harlan Ellison. But if you watch the show, it says created by Cordwainer Bird because he was so upset with how the show was going. So that is my new podcast. It's an experiment. It's limited series. I have ideas for seasons beyond that, but I thought, why not? And my guest host, it's a rotating guest host, and it's different every week. And it's people who have done things in, whether it's podcasting about sci-fi stuff or writing books that are science fiction or whatever it might be, but people who are creating in that realm of sci-fi and fantasy.
I enjoy the show. I enjoy your show more than I enjoy the show. If that makes any sense. Because, I mean, the idea is...
You don't have to watch the show to listen to the podcast.
Come on, who are we talking to? The idea is... The ideas in The Star Lost are big, and they're huge, and they're expansive. The production doesn't live up to that. But that doesn't mean the ideas aren't really good. And so... What I like about your show is that it breaks it down and sort of talks about some of those, which I find really fascinating. And you get the sense that the fact that this show didn't get off the ground is kind of sad. So, but the fact that it got 16 episodes is kind of impressive.
It it did get off the ground. They right. did it, you know, and there yes. is something to be celebrated there. So, yeah. Well, thanks for bringing randomly. It up completely randomly and just, you know, like unplanned and... Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to if you're gonna have a podcast, you might as well use it to plug your other podcasts.
That's true. That's true. So, also, buy my book, Ghosts of the Future. Go to BenAvery.com.
If I had... Yeah. No, seriously.
Actually, good... buy my book. Yeah. I wouldn't mind that either.
To sell or podcasts to plug. Samantha, do you have a book to sell or a podcast to plug?
Ghost of the Future. No. No. Unfortunately, no. Just, welcome to level 7. That's what I'll promote.
Go back and listen to this episode again.
Yeah. Hey, everyone, thank you so much for listening. Yes. And if you made it this far, double thank you for listening. And Patreon patrons, thank you for listening to the even longer version of what we just heard. Until next time, everyone, Godspeed.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.